Well, good morning and welcome to Saturday in the Studio. I'm Tom King. Usually, Merle Kelch is here to take your financial questions. But today, it's attorney Alan Haugum from the Haugum Law Firm here in Wausau. And as we say most times when you're here, Alan, we will take any legal question today. Is that the plan?
I'm in a giving mood today, Tom. I feel like we can share the wealth and take any question.
All right, any legal question, but you do have an area of expertise.
I do. I'm an estate planning and elder law attorney, meaning that we deal mostly with transferring assets to the next generation, either while you're living or after you've died. And, of course, there are some different scenarios that come up as people age.
And certainly those are things, serious questions for people who are nearing the end of life and how they want to protect what they've accumulated and pass it on to the next generation. And there's no one way of doing it, right? Every person's situation is different, although there are some basic rules that people need to follow, right?
There are some. You know, we have some similarities, I guess. Every family's different. Every set of families' goals probably primarily are different. I think that's maybe where you think of first. But we have some common themes that go through different family structures, and depending on if you're married or single, if you have kids or don't have kids, depending on what types of assets you want to transfer. If you said, I have a house and a car and a CD at the bank, that might be a little bit easier. There might be some things you still want to make sure of to protect them from all the people outside the family that might think they have a right to some of your stuff. But as you get into different types of assets, there might be some rule changes. We have IRAs for a lot of folks that are becoming a bigger portion of their assets, and we have certainly tax law issues with that. For some people, it's real estate. It's in addition to the house, there might be a back 40, or there might be a cottage, or in our area, there are a lot of family farms, those types of things. If you own a business, we're into yet another category. So I think you take a look at where things are, the predominant dollar values in those different categories, and then what your goals are for how we transfer them to the people you want to give them to.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the changes that have maybe occurred since people, you know, put their plan together or thought about their plan 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, and how things might have changed from then until now, and what folks need to be aware of as they maybe look at tweaking the plan a little bit.
Well, one of the changes that we've dealt with probably over the last 15 years that seems to have gone up and down and up and down and up and up and up and down and down and up is the estate tax. The estate tax, really one of the taxes that people are most concerned about, that we probably don't have to worry as much as we used to. In the last 15 years, the limits for that have been all over the board, from a low of about $600,000 of property to an unlimited amount, just depending on which year you die, which really became just kind of a crapshoot as to how much you would pay, whether you died in December or you crossed the line and died in January.
That was the famous George Steinbrenner situation,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And Duncan, the oil tycoon down near Houston, you know. So a few of these literal billionaires died in years when they paid no tax. If you died in a different year and you had $600,000 or $700,000, you paid a tax. And you say, this is a ridiculous system where it's that random. Well, thankfully, that has kind of subsided. They've raised that limit. So we don't worry quite as much about the tax for now. Now, it's one that Wisconsin in the past has enacted and let sunset and enacted and kind of gone back and forth on. So we can always have that tax again, and I'm sure at some point we will. But right now, it's for folks who have less than about a $5 million estate, it's not something we have to worry too much about for the estate tax. The income tax, however, is a different scenario. And the income tax comes up in a few different ways. One is, who's going to pay the income or the income tax due on certain retirement accounts? We have IRAs. A lot of folks have IRAs or 401ks. And some of the folks have the Roth IRAs or the Roth 401ks or the Roth 403bs and all the different scenarios. So the Roth folks, that works a little bit better for the tax situation because you don't have to pay a tax anymore. You paid the tax already, it grows tax-free, and you can take it out. And there's some rules about when you take it out that are pretty lenient. But for all others, the 401ks, 457s, 403bs, IRAs, they're just traditional plans. There's an income tax to be paid. And that income tax has to be paid either by the account holder, or if they don't draw the entire account out during their lifetime, it's going to be paid by whoever their beneficiaries are. And sometimes we'll talk to parents, and parents might be retired. We might have parents in their 70s or their 80s or 90s even, who say, well, I don't want to take the money out of that account because I have to pay a tax. And, folks, I'm not the financial advisor. I'm not the CPA. But from the legal standpoint, we still want to know about this because we have to figure out how different assets are going to be transferred. And if you have a money market or a CD or some type of cash in the bank and also an IRA, we'll often have people say, I don't want to take money out of the IRA because I'd have to pay an income tax. Let's just use the savings account or the money market or the CD. And one of the things to think about, at least from the legal standpoint, is we're going to transfer all of that to someone anyway. Unless you have a plan to literally spend every last penny right to the last day, and most people don't. There's something they're going to be transferring. Take a look at what would be a better idea, and maybe from the tax standpoint. So if I talk to parents, oftentimes they have a Social Security income. Sometimes they have pensions. A lot of times people don't have any pension. So they're well within that lower either 10% income tax bracket or a 15% income tax bracket. I think for a married couple, between the exemptions and the deductions, you can get up to into the $80,000 to $90,000 of total gross income before you get above the 15% bracket. And for a lot of folks, that's much higher than their retirement income. So if they were to take money out of an IRA on a systematic basis and use that in retirement, and an IRA is an individual retirement account, I think is what most people refer to it as. That's retirement. That's your individual retirement. So use it for that. Don't squander it or don't take all of it out in 1 year and push up your tax bill. But if you take a little bit out and you use it over the course of your retirement and you do pay a 15% federal tax on that, maybe that's okay. If you don't use it, and you end up transferring that to kids. We'll just pick on someone and say they've got two kids. Oftentimes, the kids are in a higher tax bracket than the parents, and by preserving it, the parents are unwittingly forcing the kids to pay a higher tax, and Uncle Sam gets more of your retirement account than if you had actually used it and enjoyed it while you were retired. So we don't want to give everyone the impression that they should squander or waste or use money frivolously that they don't need or won't enjoy. But I think they should
leave that to the government, right?
Right, the government will do that for you. Good point, Tom.
All right, 715-845-2155. If you have a legal question for Alan here, give us a call this morning. That's why we're here. This is the perfect time to get, I would call it free legal advice.
Well, but
it is free legal advice.
Absolutely.
So give us a call here this morning, 715-845-2155. What else did you want to touch on this morning?
Well, I want to touch on the free legal advice. We should switch to a subscription service here or something, Tom. I never thought of that. What a horrible idea.
You are a lawyer, and you play one on the radio.
Correct.
You didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
No. The other tax question, maybe we can get into some more of the estate planning topics as the show goes on. Before I forget, though, this being tax season, the other tax question I sometimes get are this new 3.8% tax, the 0.9% Medicare tax, and some people think that's going to apply to them. They say, if I sell my house, will that apply to me? And they get these emails that tell them different things, or get some postcard in the mail that seems mildly misleading about what they're paying. You know, for most folks, that's not going to affect them. I think that 3.8% a tax is on your net investment income. So that's mainly things like dividends, I think, is the one that we get if you have a large stock portfolio that's not in IRA accounts. But that only applies to folks if as a joint couple, for example, their adjusted gross income is over $250,000, or it's $200,000 is a limit for single people. So that doesn't affect most people in our area. If it does, there's things you can maybe do about that, plan a little bit around that. But there's just a little common misconception that everyone's going to be touched by that. We certainly do get attacked by some of these income tax and some of the income tax changes on a yearly basis. But that one, hopefully, we can avoid, at least for most of us. So,
all right, 715-845-2155. We'll take a quick break. Come back with more. We're talking to attorney Alan Haugum from the Haugum Law Firm here in Wausau. Give us a call. We'll be right back on WSAU.
Wow, yeah, since the storm, it's been crazy busy for us. We got all kinds of office desks coming in. Here's a fancy one right here. It's missing a leg, but that's all right. Whatever. Washers and dryers from a laundromat. Wow, and check this out. Another deep fryer. And I'm not sure what this doohickey is. Yeah, most businesses weren't ready for a storm like that, you know. But our work's really piling up here at Roberts & Son Salvage.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency. And 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff. But still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
One by one, they step into the arena to share an idea, express an opinion, then provoke a reaction.
Now I'm doing something. I was ignoring it for too long.
From local legends to national superstars, and you're invited to join them.
I want to know how many taxpayers in this country feel that this government is representing them.
Seth, Tom, Chris.
Stay informed. It's very important that everybody knows what's going on in the world.
Jerry Bader, Rush Limbaugh, and Sean Hannity. WSAU.
And we are back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with attorney Alan Haugum, the Haugum Law Firm here in Wausau, taking your questions about estate planning issues, end-of-life issues, nursing home issues. Those are all things you deal with all the time, right?
They are. Yeah, those are the probably the bigger things. You know, when we talk about what when you want to protect things, we certainly protect from income tax issues. We want to protect them from the income, the unforeseen or the kind of the rarely seen income tax issues, which you can talk about today. The other are really whoever else would get to it. You know, for older folks, as we, you know, age and become retire and health issues become a concern, we certainly have, you know, protection from long-term care or nursing home issues. The federal government says there's a certain amount that you are going to pay for your long-term care, but you can do things to cap that so that there are things that you can protect. When we give things to kids, can we protect them from if the one of the kids gets divorced? I've, you know, we've had a few divorce issues in our office that were unexpected from some younger folks recently that parents were, you know, that need to be aware of or need to make provisions for. You know, one of the other things that we get are if you have assets that you're transferring to someone who might not be able to handle it. We had a family in our office this week that said, they have rental properties, and sometimes this comes up just because there are difficult to deal with assets, but this family had rental properties, duplexes and those types of things, and a pretty substantial amount, and said that if they transferred those to their one and only child, that child probably isn't able to handle them. So, you know, their son, I think, is approaching 30 and should be able to, you know, we'd all think, well, a 30-year-old, he can take care of it, but they said that that great guy, and he's employed and he pays his bills, but he really just isn't responsible enough, objectively responsible enough, to handle some of these things. That they could give those to him, but it, in the past he hasn't made real good decisions with money, and they're hoping that over the next few years he's married and has children and maybe kind of grows up into that role. But they said, if something happened to us now, we have to figure out what to do. And I think this family was thinking about it right, because their goals were to maximize what they had and what they'd saved for and the work they'd put into it, but wanted to make sure that it didn't go to someone in a way that wasn't responsible. So we talked about it. And when you think about, Tom, how you transfer those types of things in their situation, they said step one was, if they died, you could just sell everything. Just sell every last duplex. But as we know with real estate, when you have a forced sale, they said if we had to sell it on short notice now, we don't think we would get full price for it. You know, some of those places still had mortgages on them, and they cash flowed, meaning that the rent more than covered the bills and provided them with a monthly income. But if they had to just sell them to whatever highest bidder they could find on short notice, they said, we don't think we'd get anywhere near the full value. We think we'd get somewhere between 50 to 70 cents on the dollar because of the real estate market now. And they think in the next 5 to 7 years, that would get better. So we need to figure out a way not only to deal with that time period from a real estate sales standpoint, but also maybe that might coincide with their son getting a little bit older, getting a little bit more responsible, and hopefully those two time paths come together.
Well, before we go into ways of doing that, let's go to the phone here this morning. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
This is Ellen.
Hi, Ellen. You're on with Ellen. Go ahead.
Ellen.
Hello. I'm trying to settle my mother's estate. She died last summer, and I've been trying to do a lot of it on my own, but then I got a letter from an attorney here saying that I was supposed to file an inventory. Okay, what is an inventory and what does it consist of?
Well, Ellen, it depends on what type of estate your mom had, if she had a will or if she had a trust, and the types of assets she had, but what...
Well, it was all transfer on death was her home, and everything else was payable on death.
Well, it. Do you know what type of attorney would be contacting you? Is it someone from the county?
Well, I went to have her final taxes done, and okay. This lawyer told me that he would give me some information, and what he did was check up on see what I had done already, and on here it said that I was supposed to have inventory done as of July 19th. But the problem was that Ellen broke my leg just a few days before Christmas.
And
on January 19th, it was due. So it says I need an itemized set of assets. And it's otherwise, I've been doing the account, you know, keeping her bills paid and taking care of closing all the accounts. I have now filed her final tax return and waiting for that to come back. I have the fiduciary letter or domiciliary letter telling me that I'm the representative. And I've done... closed out all the accounts except for one that is giving me a problem. But then I get this thing that I was supposed to prepare and file an inventory.
Right.
So what does that consist of?
Well, if you have what happens, Ellen, is if it sounds like you are going through the probate process.
Yes.
If your mom had a will, if she had a will or if she didn't have any estate planning documents at all and we needed to transfer the assets, what we usually will do, we'll start with just listing them informally. Just making a list, whether it's you or your attorney or whomever does it.
Like what kind of things I'm asking?
Everything. Everything that your mom had title to. And that list includes vehicles and her house and bank accounts, insurance, retirement accounts, land, just everything and anything, right down to every last snowmobile and motorcycle your mom was using and whatever
everything,
it was.
Everything has to be... documented, you're
well,
saying.
Well, to start with.
Okay.
And then what you do is you really figure out how each of those is going to be transferred. Now, there are pluses and minuses, and we've talked about them on the show, and we'll be talking about them on the show again in great detail, probably over either, if not today, over the next few weeks, or in the next few weeks. But we may start with saying, well, Mom had a checking account. And you said, all right, the checking account had $1,000 in it, but the checking account was payable on death to my daughter, Ellen. So what you do is you go to the bank and you deal with the payable on death. They might require a death certificate. But the bank will then, when they get the proper documents, if that truly was a POD or a payable on death account to you, they'll just pay you the $1,000 and close the account and it's done. So
okay, but I have to document that, you're saying, though, first.
Well, I think what you need to do is you need to make a list so that you know exactly what needs to be transferred, because we're going to get to step two and three, and that's going to become much more important. So step one.
Well, who is this list going to?
I think it's just for Ellen first.
Well, for me, but it's going to be split up between the three children.
Okay.
You know, there's three of us, and everything was, like I said, payable on death, or the house came to us as a transfer on death.
Okay. So do you have any documents, or do you have any assets of any kind that aren't payable on death or transfer on death?
Just the van. And the van is going to probably be coming to me as being her representative.
Now, what do you mean it'll probably be coming to you?
You know, like I'm taking that instead of taking the 2% or whatever they recommend that you take for being the personal representative.
Okay. But it's 2% of what? If everything transferred on death, then the estate, what you get the 2% of, is a pretty small number. If you say there's nothing that's transferring other than everything's going by a payable on death, and this is where the step one comes in before we get to step three. You need to make the list of everything that she has and figure out how every single item is going to be transferred. And if you're saying that everything other than the van, everything else she has, is payable on death or transfer on death, then what you do is you have a job to do with each one of those institutions or with the Register of Deeds or whomever is the governing body for each one of those places to do the transfer on death, the payable on death. And in the end, Ellen, you're left with nothing but a van. And what that does is now you have to deal with the courthouse in one way or the other, and you say, my mom, everything's transferred. Everything's taken care of. She has nothing left except for the van. So what the van is, the van's of value. Your mom might have some expenses. She might have a funeral expense. She might have other kinds of expenses that have to be paid. But the van has a value, and whatever bills she has have to be paid for before anyone can get the van, because otherwise you have to sell the van to pay the bills. But if the bills are all paid, everything is satisfied, and it just happens to work out perfectly so that all the PODs and the TODs are transferred, the bills are paid exactly, and all we have left, the only thing that we have to deal with through the courthouse, is a van, then your inventory that you file with the courthouse may be only the van. That's it. So the inventory isn't too terribly complicated. It might just be, it's just any asset that doesn't transfer some other way automatically. So for you, then you get to take 2% as a personal representative fee, what we used to call the executor. 2%
right.
As a personal representative fee, but it's 2% of the value of the van. It's not 2% of the value of the POD assets, because you didn't do anything for those. Those were POD. It's not 2% of the transfer on death assets, because those don't fall under your personal representative powers. So you don't do anything for those as the personal representative. So it's really just 2% of the van, if that's the only asset. But now we have to figure out how to transfer title on the van. So there's a couple ways you can do it. You can go to the courthouse, and if the value of the van, now, I don't know what kind of van it is, for some people with really, really nice vans, if the value of the van was more than $50,000, which is rare, but for anybody out there who has a van that's worth more than $50,000, you have to go through the probate process, and that's a series of court dealings that a lot of times we'd rather avoid, and frankly, the courthouse would probably rather we did it a different way, too. If it's less than $50,000, you can draft what's called a transfer by affidavit, which means you get to avoid filing the will with the court. Really, even if you file the will, you don't have to go through the probate process. You don't have to file an inventory other than writing it on that transfer by affidavit. It's a very simple process, actually, very little cost, and it will allow you to transfer the van as long as you promise to pay the bills and certain things like that. Now, what it would happen is you'd have to pay the bills out of the equity of the van, and then the remaining equity of the van gets transferred to the people your mom would have transferred things to in her will. So it's not a terribly cumbersome process.
She just can't keep the van as her executor's fee. She's got to go through the process of selling it to cover it and then give a portion of it to the other people who are in the will.
Right, or buy them out. If you say, hey, this van's worth $6,000 and there's three kids,
but they've already agreed that would be a payment to me. They don't want anything to do with it.
Well, it's really not a payment to you, and you don't want it to be a payment to you, because if it's a payment, then for your services, then that's $6,000 of income.
And you have to pay taxes on that.
You got to pay taxes on that. So you don't have it's 2% of the van is your fee. I would waive the fee, and you can give the van to the three of you. And then if, and only if your siblings are so charitably inclined that they think you're such a nice person, they want to gift that van to you, but it's not for your services, you know, because it really, there's 2% of a van isn't a whole lot. They can do whatever they want with it, you know, and we're not trying to avoid the income tax or anything, but we don't want you just to pay needlessly for something that, you know, $6,000 isn't your personal representative fee. But if you tell, you know, the inventory folks, or you tell the courthouse, or you tell the your tax guy, the one you've been dealing with, that your fee is the van, well, then you are obligated to put the total value of the van on your income tax return next year and pay some taxes on that. Well, that doesn't sound like a good idea to me.
No, it doesn't.
But, all right. All right. Thanks for the call. Okay. Appreciate it. 715-845-2155.
I think that's one example, though, where you really can get yourself tied up in some knots with something that you can deal with a whole lot easier. Just get a little bit of good advice, and you can do that.
You had one of those vans with a sunset and a wolf on the side and shag
carpeting.
You had one of those, didn't you? Yeah, bounced up and down as you were driving down the road. All right. We've got some news to do here. We'll be back after the news break with more. If you have a question for Alan, give us a call. We'll be right back on WSAU.
Practical Polly Radio. I've switched to cooking with healthier oils. So now what do I do with all these tubs of lard? Skinny jeans feeling too tight. A bit of lard on your hips and thighs and those pants slide on like a dream. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. Chinese officials say their satellite has spotted a large object in the southern Indian Ocean in the search for that Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. The announcement was made during the daily press briefing of Malaysia's transportation minister. A federal judge says Michigan's ban on gay marriage is unconstitutional. The judge said the ban violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Some counties in Michigan say they'll issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples as early as today. Clark County authorities say that a Neillsville policeman acted properly in the fatal shooting of a 23-year-old man who threw a knife at him while drunk. Prosecutors ruled that on Friday Aaron Bembister's performance of his duties did not constitute any criminal wrongdoing. According to local businesses in Milwaukee, playing host to the NCAA men's basketball tournament has been nothing but sweet. Visit Milwaukee reports an estimated $4.6 million is expected to impact the local economy around the Bradley Center. The Badgers take on Oregon tonight. You can hear the game right here, pregame show at 5:30. The Badger men's hockey team playing in the Big Ten championship game, taking on Ohio State. You can hear that game on our sister station, Fox Sports Radio, AM 1390 and FM 93.9. The Pointer men's hockey team playing for the D3 National Championship tonight, taking on St. Norbert in Lewiston, Maine. And the state girls basketball tournament will finish up with championship games today. Among the matchups, Rapids Assumption against Barneveld in Division 5, and Neillsville will play for the Division 3 title against Kettle Moraine Lutheran. The weather forecast today, we're looking for mainly cloudy skies and a high around 26. For tonight, an overnight low of 20. Mostly sunny, but cold tomorrow, a high of 20. Monday, a few snow showers developing by the evening and a high of 28. That's news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News Station, WSAU.
Are you thinking about getting your GED diploma? Well, here at the GED Pep Talk Center, we've got a number of pep talks that can motivate you.
Sometimes things don't always turn out the way you want them to.
You know that feeling? People look at you and don't believe in you.
You want some gentle encouragement. Then you're on your way to your GED diploma and a better life.
But I know you're probably just a little bit nervous.
You can find it in yourself to take that first step.
You can improve your future.
You can do this. I know you can.
You need to start pushing yourself.
Now get your game face on and take the first step towards a better life.
Hurry up. Don't make me repeat myself.
Whatever level of motivation you need to get your GED diploma, we've got a pep talk that's right for you. Call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org for your pep talk and find free GED classes in your area. GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education, brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
It's not a matter of if severe weather happens.
National Weather Service's issued flash flood watch.
If bad traffic happens.
Overturned 18-wheeler.
And if breaking news happens.
Right now, not.
It's when it happens. And when it does.
When something's happening.
It happens here at the top and bottom of the hour.
It's a place you can go to get answers.
Get important information quickly.
When something happens.
When it happens.
That's my first stop.
AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with attorney Alan Haugum from the Haugum Law Firm here in Wausau. Before the break, you were talking about ways that folks can do some transfer of assets, and we're talking about this tax situation.
Yes.
I guess go into more detail about that.
I think we'll do a couple things. Let's do that. The other one was, even as a follow-up to Ellen's question before the break, you know, we talk about all the things that Ellen could do or should have done or would have done. Now that she's into probate, obviously, if she needs the inventory, I think it's just, it's literally about as easy as just filing a list with the court that says, here's the inventory, here's the list of assets, it's a van, here's what the blue book is, here are the expenses, you know, you can file that too. It has to get approved and then proceed with transferring it. It's not super complicated. I think it's just, and if you have some personal difficulties or you have the, I think she said she had some health issues and a broken leg right about the time the inventory was due. You know, let the court know. If you don't, the worst thing you can do is just not tell the court, and they start sending you overdue notices, and eventually they will drag you down there for an inventory. And, you know, they say that you have to transfer assets, and, you know, a few thousand dollars for a van is real money to some people, and, you know, including probably the two people in this studio here. So you have to get those things done, but it's fairly easy to do. It's not overwhelming. Just go down there if you need some help, you know, find somebody who can help you. But the other tax situations that we talked about, you know, one of them is, and maybe we'll do it on a future show, we'll talk about just the basics. About once a year we talk about just the basic documents that everybody should have. If you're married, make sure you have what's called a marital property agreement. The marital property agreement is, it's not a prenuptial agreement. If you're already married, it's too late for that, most likely. But a marital property agreement primarily will help you with income taxes. And it's a document that... that's only for married people, and it's only if you are living in or you're residents of the state of Wisconsin. But you really get to choose how much tax the surviving spouse pays when they sell something. So this is an easy one, Tom, for all of our married folks out there. If you have property that's gone up in value, and by property it could be real estate, might be 10 acres of land, it might be the duplex, it might be the cottage, it's the farm, it's anything. Or it could be mutual funds, you know, not the ones in IRAs, but just regular mutual funds. Anything like that that's gone up in value that has a capital gain. If you have anything with a capital gain and you sell it, you have to pay a capital gains tax. Now, the classic example that we've used on the show before is if you have, someone bought a piece of land, and years ago they bought, you know, 20 acres of land, and it was worth $10,000, and that has now gone up to $50,000. When you sell it, you have to pay tax on the difference between the $10,000 and the $50,000. It's capital gain. You pay capital gains tax. That's if both spouses are living. If both spouses have died and you give it to the kids, they get a step up in basis from the $10,000 that you paid to the $50,000 it's worth when you died, and they can sell it the day after you died for zero tax. So we say instead of having $40,000 of capital gain, where we have to pay capital gains tax on that, after you died, after you both died, the kids pay zero tax. Well, in Wisconsin, you get to choose how much tax the surviving spouse would pay after one spouse died. And it really is about as complicated as, do you want the surviving spouse to pay all the tax, half the tax, or none of the tax? And you heard me right. All the tax, half the tax, or none of the tax. Just pick one, whichever one you want. Just take your time. Don't all rush in at once. But, and if you say, well, wait a minute, none of the tax. Well, okay, then create and find someone to help you with a marital property agreement. It's one where you probably do need a lawyer for that one. You don't just do that as a form, but it'll save you a lot of income tax. So easy tip for the day.
All right, we've got a couple of calls lined up, so let's go back to the phone. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
This is Scott.
Hey, Scott, you're on with Alan. Go ahead.
Scott.
Good morning. Question regarding revocable trust.
Life insurance policies and investments, such as variable annuities, provide beneficiary designations. What's the best way to include these in a revocable trust?
Well, Scott, I think a lot of that depends on how you want your those beneficiaries set up for everything you have. What I would recommend is that you have the trust set up and anticipating that it will be the recipient of life insurance proceeds, variable annuities, and even things like IRAs and 401k plans, too, because that's where people have a lot of their assets. When you think about, you know, life insurance, people don't buy $10,000 life insurance policies anymore. They buy $100,000 policies or $250,000 policies, it seems like. So sometimes those are bigger dollar amounts. And the trust is a great place not only to avoid probate, like Ellen was talking about, you know, just avoid all of that mess, but to really craft how you want things to be distributed. So, Scott, for your in your example, you might say, well, I want to make sure it goes to my kids, but what if one of my kids dies? I don't want to give it to their 15-year-old or their 18-year-old or their 6-year-old, so your trust might talk about that. If you give things to your daughter, but your daughter ever becomes divorced, well, you say, I want my daughter to keep it. I don't want it to go to my son-in-law or my ex-son-in-law now, so give it to your revocable trust. And what you do is you just set up the beneficiary designation on the life insurance. Very easy to do. The life insurance, instead of saying it all goes to my wife first and then my kids, say it goes to my revocable trust, and then the revocable trust describes all the rules. The other thing this does is it just makes it easier. You have one plan then. The revocable trust is the one plan for how everything in your life is going to be transferred. And then all you have to do is whenever you have an asset or whenever you have anything with a beneficiary designation or a title, just kind of make all those arrows point to the trust, and the trust is the place with the plan. It's kind of like a big funnel. You know, it just everything goes into there. You have one place for the plan, and it makes it much, much easier on you. Frankly, you know, and if you have more assets, it's like as Ellen was talking about before the break, it would make Ellen's job much, much easier, all those kinds of things. But I think just name the trust as the beneficiary, you'll be a whole lot better off. So.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's go back to the phone here. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Gino.
Hey, Gino, you're on with Alan. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Okay. Good morning, Al. I received a flyer from my very fine attorney, and in the flyer it says, ask yourself these questions. I'm going to drop right down to number 5, which is, have I reviewed the American Taxpayer Relief Act of 2012 with my estate planning attorney to determine the impact of any applicable tax law changes? Why do I need to do that?
The ATRA is, I think this is, when you say that you have a very fine attorney, I think you have what sounds like a very comprehensive attorney who is probably doing a little bit of just making sure that they don't have anyone who falls into some of the tax law changes. Now, ATRA was a it changed a number of things, but we have ATRA-like tax changes every year. And I think what this list of questions is trying to do, without getting too specific about your situation, we won't dive into exactly line for line what that does, but what it's really saying is review things periodically to make sure that as the tax laws change, you don't get caught in a place that you're going to be paying extra tax and you could have avoided it. You know, one of those is we talked about earlier in the show, we have this 3.8% net income, net investment income tax surcharge. We have this 0.9% Medicare tax surcharge, depending on your income levels. And what that means is, for some folks, if you have income over certain limits, and for single people, let's just say that you're single, if your income is over $200,000 for certain issues, if it's over $400,000 per year in other categories, your tax goes up by quite a bit. And what your attorney there is just saying, if that's you, you know, talk to your attorney and figure out ways to deal with it. You know, your net investment income tax, if they're tacking on the 3.8%, we have some folks who are going to be in a 43.4% federal income tax bracket. That's not even employment taxes, that's not Social Security or Medicare, not state income taxes, anything else. It's 43.4 for those folks And you say, wait a minute, you know, this is crazy. Can we do something about it? And you can, but I think that's what the attorney's talking about, just so you don't come back 10 years later and say you've been paying an extra $10,000 or $20,000 or $40,000 a year in income taxes that you wouldn't have had to pay if you'd planned.
Okay, so far then, what I understand is that what you're talking about is you're talking about the high-income people, right, rather than
This may not even apply to you, but it seems like the attorney wants to make sure that that's the case, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably. I think Tom's right about that. That we have someone who is just saying, if he sends this list out, he or she, if your attorney, you said it was a very fine attorney, he or she sends the list out to all of their clients. They might have 100 or 200 or 500 clients that they've dealt with through the years, and a few people in that list are going to be affected by each one of those list of 10 questions.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what they're talking about, I think. That they're not, they might not be saying that you, Gino, particularly are dealing with ATRA, although maybe you are. You know, that might be something that touches you. I think what they're saying is here are 10 questions, and something on this list probably touches just about everybody. Just go in, talk to the attorney, make sure everything's in the right place, and it doesn't hurt just to review it.
Well, if my trust is only a year old, and it looks like this question that I've asked you is not a red flag to my trust, then I ought to be comfortable with what I've done and just skip a year, wouldn't it? As long as I'm comfortable with it, I wouldn't bother my fine attorney that I'm doing business with.
I don't think it's a bother. If they're sending you a list and saying you need to call us, I wouldn't feel like you're bothering them, certainly. But it's one where, how would I say this with the being politically correct? I wouldn't want to give you advice over the radio that tells you not to review your
trust.
But
it's like going to a doctor for a checkup when you feel great and haven't had any illness for the foreseeable past. Maybe it's not needed. You can skip a year, whatever the case may be.
I think if you felt comfortable skipping a year, I think you know, maybe that's okay. But certainly don't do it too frequently. You know,
yeah.
ATRA is really dealing with higher income tax bracket people. The estate tax changed. So, you know, it might be, I'll tell you one thing where ATRA might touch people is if you had assets that were over $1 million in the past and you did all kinds of estate tax work in your document and now it doesn't apply, you know, do you adjust that? Usually we'll set it up so it wouldn't hurt you at all. But I think that might be one of the questions. But otherwise, I think if you're comfortable with it, you feel free to take or leave those 10 questions and maybe put off the review for a year and your attorney be okay with that.
Okay. Thank
All right.
you, my friend.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's take a break here. We'll come back with more. We've got attorney Alan Haugen with us today on the program. Give us a call if you have a question for Alan. Back in a moment on WSAU.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the woods, just outside of town.
Oh, not surprising. You've got your home. Bears have theirs.
Yeah, but see, this wasn't just any bear. This bear was wearing jeans and a hat, as in a Smokey Bear.
Jeans and a hat. That's definitely Smokey. What exactly did he have to say?
Well, we were about to head home, you know, after having a bonfire.
Oh, I can guess where this is going.
Right. See, Smokey told me the fire wasn't actually out. He said if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
That's true. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Wow, no kidding?
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
that was a joke.
Oh.
If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. Only you can prevent wildfires.
Safely. Cast your views together 3 times.
It's just a click away.
There is no place like home.
But making sure your child is in the right seat is just one of the steps down the road to safer travels.
I don't know how it works.
Find the right seat for your little one's age and size. There's no better way to get home safely. Know for sure that your child is in the right seat.
How can I ever thank you enough?
Get all the facts at safercar.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
All over America, people are taking the national radon test. Have you? Excuse me, have you heard of radon?
Is that a gas?
Is it something that comes up out the ground or something?
It's like poison gas.
Something dangerous that you're supposed to check on to make sure it's not in your home.
Now it's your turn. Answer true or false. Radon is a radioactive gas. True. Radon is a radioactive gas. True or false? The Office of the Surgeon General recommends that all homes be tested for radon. True, your home should be tested.
I didn't know that, no.
True or false, radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. True.
True, I didn't know that.
Radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. Answer true or false. Homes with radon problems can be fixed. True. Homes with radon problems can be fixed.
So what do you do about it? I'm going to dial the number and call.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
If I don't take care of it, nobody else will.
Keep your family safe from radon. Call now.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
Badgers basketball is hot.
The oven screen, three in the air, right of the circle, book.
Badgers hockey is cool.
And shoots and scores. They have gone off door.
Central Wisconsin's Badgers sports station, AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
The Badgers' next NCAA game is coming up Saturday night against Oregon. Game coverage begins at 5:30 on your home for Badger basketball. News, talk, sports, WSAU.
And we're back here in the studio. We've got a few minutes left. If you want to get through and talk to Alan, give us a call right now, 715-845-2155. Remember, Badger basketball coming up tonight. The Badgers taking on Oregon in the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Pre-game show at 5:30 here on WSAU. And that means the Badger hockey game playing for the Big Ten tournament championship against the Ohio State Buckeyes, who surprised Minnesota last night. And you can hear the Badger hockey game on our sister station, Fox Sports Radio, AM 1390. That's also, I believe, a 7 o'clock tip for that one. Let's go back to the phone here this morning. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Hey, this is Steve.
Hey, Steve, you're on with Alan. Go ahead.
Morning, Steve.
Hey, Alan. Hey, just got a quick question. The last couple of years, I've noticed there's been a form I've needed to sign from my accountant that was a sales tax verification kind of thing. And it seems like each year it gets more and more detailed. And they want individual citizens to basically keep track of our online purchases and what we did not pay sales tax for. We're supposed to keep track of that, and sounds like they want us to remit that to the state. And, like, I've not been keeping track of that. That's a ridiculous amount of work to try to keep track of. I mean, so I've just been certifying each year that I have not, but I have.
Okay. Well, Steve, please don't tell us your last name.
I'm not going to. I obviously don't want you to know.
No, you know, one of the things.
How aggressive are they? I guess is, I got kind of an underlying question. And even
I'll give you the background. I'll give you what we've seen. The state says they will collect a sales or use tax on any retail purchases. So, and there's a whole category of what falls into that, but just, you know, assume all the retail items you buy over the internet or that you buy at your local grocery store or department store are all covered. If
right.
It's in Wisconsin, there's a sales tax. So if you go to the grocery store, department store, you buy some clothes here in Wisconsin, you have to pay, in most counties, it's about a 5.5% tax between state and county. And that sales tax is just what the state collects on all of these retail transactions. If you buy something over state lines or you buy something through the mail and you get it and they don't charge you, then you have to pay a use tax, which is equal to the sales tax. So what they're saying is you have to add up all the things that you buy over the internet and you have to pay this use tax. Some companies collect it. If you try to buy an iPad directly from Apple, whatever that iPad costs, it's $600. They're going to charge you. They say, where are you from? What's your zip code? I say, thank you very much.
Yeah.
We're going to charge you 5.5%. Apple collects it, and then Apple sends it directly to Wisconsin. You don't have to report that.
Do most companies do that? Because I don't think I've ever heard. I don't even
big
think I've heard of this. I mean,
Amazon
just
is
started.
Doing it now.
Yeah,
the big retailers are able to handle it. The problem is the small mom and pops are going to be required to send a sales tax payment to every state that they do business in if. That's really where it should be. It should certainly not be on the individual citizen.
What?
I think that amount of time that they're requiring individual people that it would take to do that, that amount of unproductive time.
Well, who's doing it? I mean, I can't believe that anybody's doing it.
Is anybody doing it is a good question.
I think what you have to do, where what we have heard, now, and don't think this is gospel because I'm not, I don't have the heartbeat of government anywhere close, but one of the things that I think is different is they are more concerned with businesses who are buying retail and not paying a tax on that. So if there are big, big dollars that are happening, I think that's where the government has in the past said they are more concerned. They could, in an audit, if you get audited and they find you do some other things and they're a little fuzzy with you.
Exactly. More thing they'll tack on. It's just, it really pisses me off. Every year I've had to sign that form, I fume at the intrusiveness and the requirement of what it would take, that unproductive wasted time from every citizen if they really complied with this law. Just burns my, you know, what
I'm... There's a few things. I think one is, Steve, just the energy that you're giving us over the radio, take, 5 to 7 minutes of your life and put it together, a letter to, your state senator, your state assembly person, and let them know.
I think the NSA already got what Steve was talking about here.
Yeah. The NSA already knows. But
The target's on my back.
I would start there. The other thing is, officially, as the lawyer, I have to tell you, you're supposed to fill it out for all of your purchases. If you buy the Apple computer, they've already done it. Amazon started doing it recently because they had that negotiation with the state and that, I think that distribution center down in Kenosha. But otherwise, are you supposed to do it? Yes. I've never heard of an individual being, penalized because they didn't, but you certainly can. And,
all right.
That's the good recommendation.
Thank you very much.
No, yeah, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Well, we're just about out of time here. If folks want to get a hold of you on Monday, how can they do that?
I'd say the best way is we have an office over on the west side of town. It is just Haugum Law Firm, LLC. So it is, give us a call. Our phone number is area code 715-843-5001, 843-5001. Or easier, on the Internet, it is www.haugumlaw.com. Which is HOUGUMLAW.com.
All right. I would imagine we'll talk to you, opening a fishing weekend probably is the next time that Merle will be taking some time.
That's probably on the agenda. Yeah, we'll figure out some fun stuff to talk about. Have a good
month.
See,
you've got all your Badger gear on, so you're ready for the
game
today.
I'm ready to go.
All right. That's Alan Haugum, the Haugum Law Firm here in Wausau today on the program. And as we mentioned, Badger basketball tonight, pregame show right here at 5:30. We've got the news and the polka shows on the way next on WSAU.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed...
6:08 to 90, 10:04.
Could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving.